This is an interview with Ava Bentley on March 18th, 1985 with Josie Fisher. Mrs. Bentley lives at 642 Pine Street, Philadelphia, 19106, telephone number 925-7262. Mrs. Bentley, can you tell us where you were born and where you grew up and a little bit about your childhood?
I was born in Budapest and I grew up in Budapest. We were very proud Hungarians. My father's family goes back to 500 years in Hungary. One of the first chief rabbi of Hungary, because that time there were different rabbinates and little shuttles. In Budapest, they established the main headquarters for the rabbinate, and one of my great-great-grandfather was the first chief rabbi of Hungary.
The name of your family, of your paternal family, was what?
Varman.
How do you spell that, please?
W-A-H-R-M-A-N-N.
Thank you.
This family gave one deputy finance minister, the first Jew, to Austro-Hungary. My father served under Franz Josef and the last king of Austro-Hungary, Charles V, I guess, for 8 years in the Navy, the Austro-Hungarian Navy. He was serving on the first submarine in the Axis powers. He served on two submarines because both of them were destroyed, and for personal bravery, and he saved lives. First he got, twice he got the silver medal, and third time he got the Iron Cross, and the last time for her personal bravery he became the last king until his reign, his personal courier, and he was stationed in the palace, the Burg Palace in Vienna. According to the Nuremberg laws, he wouldn't be considered a Jew because of those medals and his records in the Navy. And in, but he died when I was 5 years old, and the German occupation in Hungary took place in 1944. He wasn't alive that time. And those laws, even if it would be applicable, I couldn't find the documentation in the, they didn't give the documentation out to Jews from the archives, so I couldn't prove it.
In other words, the Nuremberg laws that were applied in Hungary would have exempted him from Jewish status or
yes.
identification because of his service to the crown?
Yes, because of the service of his country.
Because of his service to the country.
Yes.
So that you had that been documented, had you had those papers,
yes.
your immediate family would not have been
just
under any kind of persecution whatsoever?
He wouldn't be, his wife and his child, if he would be alive. But my mother remarried, so it wouldn't be applicable to my mother. I was the only one who would be able to use that protection.
This was a special protection that was issued by the king.
It was. This is a special protection, no, issued by Hitler, by Hitler's law.
By
those Jews, this is the Hitler law, and I don't know if we call it Nuremberg law, if it was enacted in Nuremberg or not, I cannot call it, I am not a historian. The only thing what I can tell, certain Jews were exempted and they got the non-Jewish status. That were the Jews who were awarded for bravery during the First War.
Such as an Iron Cross.
Such as an Iron Cross, such as two silver medal what he had. I have one in here even. The other one is if you were crippled or amputated, or that those people were exempted as Jews. They were not considered Jews. And
Did that hold even through the German occupation?
Yes, even in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler had one of the generals who was Jewish because of that.
One of the Hungarian generals?
No, German.
A German general.
In Hungary, we didn't have generals, Jewish generals. The highest rank, I guess, that a Jew had was a colonel.
Your father died when you were quite young.
My father died when I was 5 years old.
Do you recall, or did your mother ever tell you any information about whether or not it was difficult for him to rise in the military system in Hungary because of his Jewish background?
The stories what my mother and my father's sister told me was he was beaten by the... In 1990, it was a communist uprising in Hungary. After that, Horthy, who became, after the king, he became our governor or reign. And my father served under him because he was an admiral, and he was on Novara. That was the second submarine which my father served on.
Novara?
Novara.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the admiral on Novara, and my father served under him. And my father finished the Naval Academy on the ships and when he was at the Navy, because he enlisted before the war. And Horthy was a very anti-Semitic person by himself. He had anti-Semitic idea, and he had the guard. They called it the White Guard, who were killing out the Red Guard, the communists. Now, in the meantime, they were killing out Jews too, not only the communist Jews, but if they find a Jew on the street or wherever, they took it to the Britannia Hotel in Budapest, and some of them were skinned alive or shot. And my father was on a trip. That time he was after 1919, after the war ended, and the king wasn't in power anymore, and Horthy became the power, and my father was on a trip in the country, and they pulled him up of his car, and they beaten him savagely, because he was a Jew.
This is the White Guard?
That was the White Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And he was beaten savagely. He died of lymphosarcoma. Now, that time, the lymphosarcoma, they didn't have the studies, they didn't know what. It could be because the submarines, they weren't developed, and the caissons were dangerous, and he was serving on submarines for a long time.
Mm.
That could cause this kind of lymphosarcoma, now the studies are showing. And that time they said the beating had something to do with that, because he was savagely beaten and left on the field dead by the White Guards.
You said that he had served under the admiral on the Novara.
On Novara.
At that time, did he experience this anti-Semitism?
I really don't know. Because, quote-unquote, my father had red hair, very light complexion, very German looks. Everybody thought he was German. His second tongue was German, and he spoke Italian. He was stationed in Pola in Italy. So nobody would know unless they knew him that he was a Jew. So I don't know what he experienced, because unfortunately I missed that part of my life to know about his personal experiences.
Mm.
I know dramatic experiences like this beating.
Mm-hmm. This you were aware of, or this was reported to you by your mother?
My mother.
Your mother told you?
My mother told me.
Mm-hmm. You said your mother came from a different kind of background. We
yes.
had talked about this earlier.
My mother was born in Transylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandparents in that city, it was Maramarosziget, where Elie Wiesel is coming from.
The same town?
The same town.
Mm-hmm.
That town was populated 75% by Jews, very Orthodox Jews, with kaftans and streimlis and beard and pious.
Mm.
My grandfather was not from that town. He came from a different part of the country, not that religious, but my grandmother was from that town. So my grandfather adjusted, and he became a pious Jew, a very honest, very lovely, pious Jew. They were very Orthodox, and it was a golden time of my life to go to that city and see. All, everybody was Jewish. They had farmlands and they had lumber, and later on, even the maids were Jewish. The woodchoppers were Jewish.
This was quite in contrast to your upbringing in
Budapest. And my regular life. I spent my summer vacation there, and it was such a different background and a different culture. What I really loved, because everything was so warm. And the beggars were Jews. And I learned about being a Jew there when my grandfather, my first Seder, what I remember, that was after my father's death. I was 5 years old, and my grandfather had the Seder. And all the doors were open, and at that table, I don't know, we sat around 18 or 28 people. I don't know, I was little. My grandmother made the wine out of raisin. And I drank so much, I got drunk. I recited every prayer with my grandfather. My grandfather sat at the top of the table, white pillows, wearing the kittel.
Mm-hmm.
The kittel is the white dress of when you are buried, the mass what they are wearing. And I said everything, whatever he said. And then I got drunk and I was put in bed, but the doors were open, because grandma and grandfather said that not only the prophet, but everybody who didn't have a place to sit and was hungry, their door was always open for people to come in and be fed and have a shelter.
Did that happen? Did people come?
Yes, my grandmother brought up so many strange boys,
mm-hmm.
because they were poor people, and they send it to grandma and grandpa because they know they will give their home and their food to them. And grandmother was the first one always in the town. My grandmother was a very proud woman, very stern, beautiful big lady who was very snobbish in her own way. And she wasn't very social with anybody whom she didn't know way back, and they had to have a certain standard. But when a poor girl wanted to get married and they didn't have any dowry, my grandmother was the first one who gave and went around town to everybody who can afford it and collected for that girl's wedding and for the dowry.
Mm. Your grandparents were of an upper class then in the town?
No.
Or an upper middle class in the town?
They were middle class.
Mm-hmm.
They were very wealthy ones, and then after the First War, they were robbed and ransacked, and they were not wealthy at all.
Mm-hmm.
They were good people, but
mm-hmm.
not wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a nice life. My grandmother every year went to Baden-Baden or Marienbad to the cure for to the spas.
Mm-hmm.
She always bought the best things for the children.
Mm-hmm.
She went to Vienna and she ordered the clothes, or she went to Budapest to the spas and ordered the things, but they were not. They were much richer people there.
Mm-hmm.
They were not rich, not rich at all.
So your mother came from this observant background and this very intense Jewish identity.
Except my grandfather's brother was the banker in the town. They had the first motor car. The family was well-to-do. And they came from, they had lumbers. My great-grandparents were, my grandfather's parents owned mills, flour mills.
Flour mills.
Flour mills.
And your grandparents
and
were in
my
lumber?
And mother, my grandmother's parents, they owned a county in the mining town close to Siget. They had a salt mine and a canteen and the tobacco shop, which one was given the license was given by the government was given to my other great-grandfather on my mother's side.
And your grandfather was in what kind of business? Your mother's father, your grandfather?
He was a farmer.
He was a farmer. And he was able to own land. That was not an issue.
No. They didn't live in a ghetto. This city had certain areas where the Jewish people lived. My grandparents never lived in this area. They were mixed. Mostly where they lived, they were mostly Christian, Gentile people.
And was that difficult? Did that present any problems?
Not
you remember?
Them. No. No, they were very friendly with those people.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents never liked to live in a ghetto, in an environment where it was just... My grandmother said, you belong to a land, and they spoke several languages. And actually, my grandmother went to a klaustrum, you know, to the nuns, to school.
This was a common way of Jewish girls becoming educated in those days.
Because those days they had just parochial schools,
mm-hmm.
and my grandmother went to the parochial school, and even when they had the play, the Cinderella, she was the prince.
Uh-huh.
Stage. That was her big experience. But she wasn't academically educated, and she liked to learn, but she made a point that her children were educated. Her only son became a dentist. She had 8 children, living children. The girls went to parochial schools. My mother graduated for the gymnasium, and she went to Budapest to study pharmacy.
Is that how she met your father?
Yes.
When she went to Budapest?
Yes, because her older sister was already married and living in Budapest.
Mm-hmm.
And she met my father in Budapest.
Your grandparents' home was an observant home.
Very.
Kosher.
Very.
Your grandmother, your grandmother wore a shadel. She wore a shadel.
Sure.
And yet she was a modern woman in many ways in terms of her education and what she wanted for her children.
She had lots of common sense, and she had a born intellect.
Mm.
And she always wanted to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Even my aunt is telling me when they came home from school, she was always sitting down with them. Her name was Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Rosika wants to learn too.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to learn what she never did because she just finished elementary school in those days, you know, in the early 1800s. She went to the parochial school to the nuns and she finished that. But she had an urge to learn. Even when I was a little girl, she wanted to know what I learned. I had to teach her whatever I learned.
A real hunger.
Really,
the outside world.
She wanted to learn about poems and poets, and
mm-hmm.
and she had not a good voice, but a nice little voice, and she liked to sing, and I have an awful voice, and she even tolerated that, and she was the one who built me up all the time.
Your father's background was obviously not as observant as
your
mother's.
Yes, that was an interesting thing. My father was an agnostic.
Mm.
He ran away from home, that's why he joined the Navy, because his father wanted to make a rabbi out of him because of the backgrounds, and he was very much against it.
So he was rebelling against this background of the rabbis in his family,
yes,
and
right.
he became an agnostic and was not personally observant. What happened in their marriage? Your mother had come from a very different
point. He had to observe what my mother wanted. They had a kosher home because my grandparents wouldn't eat in any other way
mm-hmm.
when they came, and my mother was very attached to her parents, and my grandparents always came and visited us. So he said, whatever you do at the home, that's your business, that's your home. Whatever I eat outside and whatever I do outside, I do. But don't ask me to wear a hat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Or go to the synagogue. So once in a while he did it for the sake of my mother. He went to the synagogue on the high holidays.
This is what your mother told you
yes.
later.
Yes.
Do you have any early memories of what
of
things were like before he died?
Little things. He was an exceptionally brilliant man. And he was disappointed he didn't have a son, so he wanted to make a son out of me.
You were the only child.
I was the only child.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, he asked me what I want to be when I grow up, and I said I want to be a ballerina or a star. What else? A movie star. He said, no, not a worm. You cannot do. You will be a politician and an attorney.
Mm.
And I was insisted that I want to have some artistic things. Every little girl said this. He said, if you are that artistic, then you can become an author.
He had definite ideas about what
he
could
do. Absolutely. Not only that, he exercised me since I was born. Before I was born, he already put up the equipment, the gym equipment in the house. And he put me up on the big fence because we lived in our home that time, and we had a fence. And he put me up on the fence, which one was a sloping fence, to walk on it. And I said, I'm scared. He said, you cannot be scared. No such a word. It's no fee. You are building it into yourself. You cannot have, he got very angry, that's what I remember. He said, you cannot have fear. You have to overcome it. And I wasn't even 5 years old when he enrolled me to a private Jewish school because he wanted to teach me to read and write. He started when I was 3 and a half or 4. And I didn't do well, and he was very disappointed. He thought I was a hopeless case. That's what I remember.
This was a private Jewish school.
Yes, I dropped out of that after his dead mother took me out because I was too young for that, and I was very playful.
Mm-hmm.
And they advised my mother, it's not my time.
This was a school that was
because in
connected with the Jewish community?
Yes,
a
Jewish school.
Mm-hmm.
Jewish private. We had Jewish private schools by that time.
And when you say reading and writing, are you talking about in Hungarian or
in Hungarian,
in Hebrew?
Not in Hebrew. It was not a religious school.
Mm-hmm.
It was a parochial school,
mm-hmm.
like Catholic,
mm-hmm.
Protestant, Jewish. And they were privately owned by the Jewish community,
okay.
And you had to pay fees.
Mm-hmm.
Because a public school, you don't have to pay fees,
mm-hmm.
well, or very little. But in the Jewish schools, they measure up your financial status, and according to your financial status, you pay your fees in the school because you are keeping up that school.
Was this?
And then the poor kid can come without paying anything.
Was this a common thing in the social group in which your parents were to send your children to a Jewish private school?
Schools, and we had tutors at home, private tutors,
mm-hmm.
beside that. So what happened, he wanted me, he knew he was dying, he diagnosed even himself, he was very affluent in Latin, and he had the best professors who were taking care of him, and in Hungary or in Europe, that time the medical profession didn't believe to tell the patients their illnesses, their diagnosis, they kept it as a secret. He had a feel that what he had. And so he called one professor up in the name of the other on the telephone and the other in the other name to get the diagnosis. And because he was so versed in Latin, the diagnoses are always, and in the medical profession until the early or late 40s and early 50s in Hungary, in the Hungarian medical school, you had to know Latin because everything was in Latin, not
mm-hmm.
in Hungarian. Now it's changed. So you had to, if you were a doctor, your diagnosis and was in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't assume that anybody who's not in that field could diagnose in Latin and converse in Latin. So he called them up and he got his complete diagnosis.
This must then have been a while before he died.
It was a year before he died. So
mm-hmm.
he decided that I have to learn how to read and write and be aware of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I still was a little child who was very playful,
mm-hmm.
and I, at the school, I didn't behave like, they couldn't discipline me because I was playful and talking and
mm-hmm.
chatting and enjoying myself and pulling ink all over my dresses and doing lots of other things. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you are with the 6 and 7 year old and you are not even 5, then you are doing things that are not, but he learned to read and write when he was 3. Because he went to school with his older sisters, and he was from the country in Hungary, in the mainland, and that time they had different age groups in schools, you know, in the country schools. So he escorted his sisters, and he loved to learn. He was brilliant.
Mm.
So he was 3 years old, and he read.
So he thought you should do the same
and
thing.
And he thought he had one child, the child has to do, and the child wasn't that brilliant, and he was.
The community in which you lived in Budapest at this time was what? What kind of people lived there?
I don't know what you mean.
Was it grouped by religion? Was it grouped by socioeconomic status?
Socioeconomic.
So that there was a mixture among your playmates, a mixture among your parents' friends?
Sure. My parents' friends were mostly Gentiles.
Why do you think that was? They were observant, and it was an observant home.
It was not really an observant home. It was such a Mickey Mouse observant.
Mickey Mouse observant, no.
We knew everything about the laws. My grandparents were strictly Orthodox, and when I went there, we observed. In our home, we had a kosher kitchen,
mm-hmm.
but we bought if ham and all those kind of things were coming in from the outside, it was served in different plates. My mother wouldn't eat it.
Mm-hmm. But she would serve it.
She would serve it, but
mm-hmm.
she wouldn't eat it, but she wouldn't mix the plates.
Mm-hmm.
She observed the kosher home, but she has seen her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And she loved her parents and respected them and respected the laws.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go to temple at Fridays.
Did you belong to a synagogue?
Yes, we did belong to the synagogue.
What kind of synagogue?
That
was
basically neologue. Neologue means this is a German movement which started in Germany in the 1800s and swept across Austro-Hungary because we were always with the Germans. And this is the base of the reform.
Mm-hmm.
It is like the conservative here.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, very enlightened. I didn't have Christmas trees because I didn't want any. If I wanted one, I would have one, but I didn't.
Did you have friends who did have Christmas trees?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then Christmas, we got gifts for Christmas, not for Hanukkah.
You did get gifts for Christmas?
Yes, not
mm-hmm.
for Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
Hanukkah, we know it was Hanukkah. We observed Hanukkah. We observed Purim. We observed very strictly the Passover. We had the Passover Seders.
Mm-hmm. And you kept the week of...
Seders, yes, strictly.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have bread in the house. We changed the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew everything about the law. But that was a semi-reform. You could call almost reform.
Mm-hmm. And the people, the other Jews that you knew, lived in a similar way?
Yes, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them.
You say that your parents didn't go to synagogue on Friday. Did they only go on the high holidays?
Yes.
Primarily. Did you have...
And we went to the mosques on high holidays, you know, and we observed Sukkot. We didn't have the...
You didn't have a sukkah?
No.
Uh-huh.
But my mother's older sister had it, so we went out there. And my mother's other sister, who was married to a Gentile, coming from this background, that was a very terrible shock to my grandparents, but she was married to a Gentile man who saved 29 Jewish people
mm-hmm.
during the 1944. I went out there. She had the Christmas tree,
mm-hmm.
and she had different dishes because she wanted her mother to visit her, so she had the kosher dishes.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Uh-huh.
But that was my first experience with anti-Semitism in my aunt's home, whom I loved dearly, and he was an absolute lovely, lovely person who was married to this gentleman who converted to Judaism.
Oh, he converted to Judaism.
He was an aristocrat. He was coming from an aristocratic background. It was a big love. They went together for 8 years, not because of his family against the Jewish family to marrying a Jew, but my grandparents were against to having a Gentile in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming from a much better background. And when my grandmother went over to his brother, who was a colonel in the army, in the Hungarian army, a very high-ranking colonel, And his father was a general. And they said, well, if the two people love each other, it doesn't matter who is Jewish and who isn't. The main thing is they love each other.
Now, you said this was the first time that you had experienced anti-Semitism.
They had children when she lived. She never had children, and she loved me very much. And every Christmas I spent there because it was so festive. And I had an aunt, my father's aunt, who went to visit Israel and came back and gave me a Mogen David, a little trinket, and I was wearing it on my chain as a child. And that was my after my father died, I spent my Christmas with my aunt, and there were children whom I played with, and they weren't Jewish. And then my aunt said, you don't have to tell them that you are Jewish, please don't tell them. And I had this little Mogen David in my neck. And I went to my friend's home, and they to help to light the candles on the Christmas tree. And they started to talk about it, the Jews killed Christ, This is take one, side two of an interview with Ava Bentley. You were talking about the experience when you were visiting these Christian children's home to decorate their tree. Not decorate, it was already decorated because they said that Jesus is coming and the trees were decorated by them. The children never know. Mm-hmm. They made some myth about that. And no, to light the candles and those little sparkly things.
I see.
And it was beautiful. The room was dark and the sparkles came up and you felt like you are in a fairyland. And in the fairyland came the tale about the Jews, that the Jews killed Christ and all the Jews have big noses and all the Jews are bad and drinking children's blood and all kind of stories. And I had the Mogen David in my breast, and I said, well, if they find out I am one of them, what's going to happen? It's terrible, it's not true. And that was the first experience what I had, and I took out my Mogen David and I hid it. I was ashamed being a Jew.
This was the first time?
It was the first time. And then I went back and I said to myself and I asked that this is not true. What? Why are they telling that? It is not true. Those are lies. How can I fight? So I didn't want to be one of those people who were killers and bad. And it was a stigma. And it was burning. It was terrible burning. And I still feel guilty about it that I took the Mogen David.
You were about how old when that happened?
Six.
Six or so.
And I didn't want to be one of of that. I wanted to be one of them and not one of those Jews.
Mm-hmm. That they were talking about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in the same time, I knew that wasn't true, and it was hurting.
Mm-hmm.
I was torn apart.
Did you talk with your parents about it when you went, or your mother about it when you went
home?
I
went back to my aunt, and then she explained it, that's a stigma what we have to fight, and it's not true. But I said, why can't I tell that I'm Jewish? Basically, she didn't express it. I couldn't talk to her about that. I didn't want to hurt her feelings, you know, subconsciously. And being a child, you know so much when you are a child, especially when you lost your father. And this aunt of mine was an absolute angel and a lovely, lovely human being. So I just couldn't comfort her with this, because she put me in a situation, she wanted the best, and she didn't want me to get hurt. Probably she wanted to protect me, that's why she told me not to tell them that I'm Jewish. Because in that community, they didn't know that she was Jewish or her husband converted to Judaism.
This was
in the 30s, the mid-30s.
In the mid-30s, in the town was...
Hungary, Budapest.
This was in Budapest itself,
yes.
But the section of
the
town...
suburb. She lived in that, they called it Chapel, it's a suburb of Budapest. They have different districts and suburbs. This was one district, which one was like you go out in Philadelphia to Rydal or to Huntington Valley from Center City.
Right.
We lived in Center City, Budapest. They lived outside, outskirts.
Now this kind of situation is very different from what you describe where you lived, where you lived in a community where there were Christians and they knew you were Jewish.
It probably wasn't different, just you weren't aware of it. I wasn't aware of it because they know I was Jewish. In this part of the town, they didn't know I was Jewish. So they
didn't know
me.
The family was Jewish?
No. They thought they were Christians. So they were open with me, because they thought I was one of them.
But where you lived, your family let everybody know that they were
Jewish?
Yes,
we had the mezuzah on the door.
And you had Christian playmates
yes.
at home?
Yes, yeah, sure.
And it was not a problem?
No, because they know. That time it was no problem. Later on, not much later, it became a problem.
Do you think in the group in which you lived, had they not known you were Jews, that they would have been
yes.
more open with you?
Yes.
In
yes.
the same
yes.
way?
Yes.
There would have been more anti-Semitism expressed.
Absolutely.
And that they were not saying these things out of politeness or regard for your background.
Yes. Yes, they would. Because it happened later.
Now, you said that you went to a public school after your father died.
Yes. No. After my father died, I went to a private school, an English private school.
An English private school.
I started my first elementary. We called it a Scotch school. They were belonged to... It was a private school which one taught English from the first elementary grade on. And we mingled with Catholic, mostly Protestant and Jewish kids, very few Catholics in that school. It was, we had different classes. We had religious classes, Jewish religion,
mm-hmm.
even in public school.
Mm-hmm.
You allowed to practice your own religion, and the rabbi or the teacher of the religious teacher came in. It would be Protestant, Catholic, Jewish. They came in and we had the religious arts and religious studies. In this school where I went in the first elementary grade, I didn't experience any anti-Semitism because most of the class was well-to-do middle class, upper middle class Jewish kids or upper middle class Protestant. And it was an environment, mostly a Jewish environment. Because the Jews were the one who wanted to learn English and wanted to give this kind of education. So we did. I went there. And
was there a great number of Jewish children in the school, or were they just
yes.
more visible?
No,
There were a lot.
Let's say the class was 65% Jewish.
And what was your experience in the school with these other children in terms of your Judaism? Was there...
No. At that time, it was...
It was a comfortable...
Comfortable, because we were most of them, most of us were Jewish. So, I didn't even know who was... I don't remember who was Protestant and who wasn't.
My friends were Jewish. Oh, the friends were Jewish.
My friends were Jewish. My little friends were Jewish.
Why do you think they were Jewish? Why were they...
I'll tell you why. Because my best friend that time was our physician's daughter. And she was my bosom buddy after my father's death. And then we had a falling out. And then my next friend was also a Jewish girl. So it just happened.
It just happened. It wasn't that you couldn't have been friends with the non-Jewish kids.
No.
It just happened.
It so happened. And then after that, I went to another school because we moved. My mother got married and we moved. And our circumstances changed. So I went to a special school, but it was a public school, but it was called... It was a teaching school. They were experimental
mm-hmm.
elementary school.
Mm-hmm. Was this also in Budapest?
Yes, mm-hmm. but in a different district. We moved from this district to another district.
Mm-hmm.
And there my best friend became also a Jewish girl who happened to my husband's cousin, who is a psychiatrist now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I met my husband.
So you were about how old then when you moved to this other school?
I was 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very hard time there, not because being a Jew, because in that class also we had lots of Jewish children. It was an experimental school and it was very advanced. We had the cubes and all those kind of
mm-hmm.
things that they experimented
mm-hmm.
us with, you know, the new reform techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the school and classes had very bright children.
Mm-hmm.
So most of them were Jewish children again. And after my mother got married, and it was the depression in Hungary, and my stepfather had a factory, a furniture factory, and he went broke, so our financial status from up went down from one day to
mm-hmm.
the other. And that was a very hard experience. So I experienced hardship, not with the children, not because I was Jewish, because I experienced it with my Jewish friends, but because I wasn't as rich
mm-hmm.
anymore. And losing my father, and losing that kind of background I experienced, I had a very hard experience. But it was a short time, and my stepfather made it back, and it started again. And so everything was going up financially again. What happened, I had a birthday party that I was in the first elementary grade, and finally we were doing well again, and my mother gave a birthday party
mm-hmm.
for me, and I invited the whole class and even the other class, 40 kids. And two Christian girls came, and most of the Jewish kids didn't. Five came, altogether we were five, three with me. Three Jewish girls, wait a second, and three Christian.
Mm-hmm.
The Christian kids came. The Jewish children didn't came, because the parents said we were new in the district anyway, and we were up. Down when we came, and then they didn't know our background, because they didn't know my parents' background, and they didn't allow their children to come my party. Since then, I didn't have a birthday. I didn't let my mother give any more birthday parties for me.
What a horrible disappointment.
It was terrible. You can imagine. The cakes were ready, everything, and they didn't show up. And my husband's aunt, who was my mother's friend, she came from Transylvania also, on a different town called Kolozsvár. It's a very famous town, and where my husband's grandfather was a gymnasium school principal, and his father was a school principal, Hungarian school principal, not Jewish, and his great-grandfather was Jewish school principal. He's coming from this background. And my friend's mother came to Budapest the same time that my mother to the university to study medicine. And they found each other through us when we became friends. With her daughter, I became friends at school, and we lived in the a block away from each other. And the mothers became friends, and we became friends. So she came over, and she was very embarrassed. And she told my mother what happened, because all the parents, all the mothers told her why they didn't let the children come to my party.
So this had to do with the social status within the Jewish community.
That's
then.
Right.
When
after that, I didn't talk to those kids. And what happened, they couldn't have the poor kids, but I didn't realize that. I held a grudge all my life. They approached me on the street later and everything. I just didn't even want to talk to them anymore.
Did you find other friends, though, in this community? You said three Jewish girls came to your party that you were as close to as you had?
No, I wasn't close to them at all.
You weren't close to them?
No.
You did not find the close friends
no,
after this move?
I had one close friend of mine that was my husband's cousin in that time in the elementary grade. And after that, I went to the Jewish gymnasium, and I have lots of lovely friends. But these girls went sideways, and I didn't even recognize them on the street.
Ah. During this time...
But I didn't have problem with the Christian girls in my class,
mm-hmm.
in the elementary. Later on, I went to public school after the elementary school, and there the anti-Semitism was rampant.
Can you describe it to me?
Oh, yes. Already the Aerocross was the move, and this was the late 30s, early 40s already.
All right, you're talking about, you were what about?
When I was 10, 11, 12,
mm-hmm. okay.
14, then
mm-hmm.
it's already, it was rampant.
Mm-hmm.
I went to, first I went to public school, and there the teachers were very anti-Semitic. The principal was very anti-Semitic.
This is in the new community to
the
which you moved.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they always singled me out. They didn't associate me with, I went to a school where we had all, the classroom we had four Jewish girls, all the others were, we were 32 or 34 in the classroom. And among that was just only four Jewish girls, four, maximum six.
So this experience of anti-Semitism was started for you when you were about 9 or 10?
No, I started at 6 at this the Christmas.
But in school?
In school it started when I was 10, I guess.
You were 10. And this is when you moved to this other community?
When we moved
when your mother remarried.
9, 8, 9. And maybe I'm take a year or so.
But it was about 1938 or so, do
yes,
you think?
Yes,
30,
38, 39, 40.
That you were feeling it in
yes,
the country.
It,
and,
yes,
and do,
38.
It was much... it was much different from when you were a younger child.
Yes.
It was much more overt.
Not only overt, but it was a field day. You see what happened. We had art classes, and the teacher who taught us art classes, she was a Schwab. Schwab means a Volksbund, a part of Hungary. They had these old German communities. They lived in Hungary for 130 years or even longer, but they maintained their own identity. They were, and they considered themselves Germans. But you didn't have to be German, the Hungarians were anti-Semitic enough. But this teacher came from that background, and she was not only an anti-Semite, she was an out and out fascist and Nazi.
Mm.
And I was the best student in the class. And she thwarted my effort of drawing. I realized later I could draw, but well, she taught writing and drawing. And She always ridiculed me in front of the class. She held up my, when I went into that class, I froze. I couldn't draw a line. She was so mean to me. She was a sadist. She hit my hand. She ridiculed me and she said, well, this is the bright one, the best student in the school. Look how he draws. And everybody started to laugh. Look at her books, how she writes. Even if I would be the Picasso, I couldn't do anything there.
Did she specifically say that you were Jewish?
Oh, yes.
She said this?
Oh, yes. I'm sure.
What'd she say?
She was always telling about the Jews, how they killed Christ, and the Jews are bad, the Jews are Shylocks, the Jews are this, and the Jews are that. She was indoctrinating the class and starting and instigating, brainwashing the children.
Did you see a change in your classmates?
After classes, always fight broke out because we were carrying the big boards, you know, when we draw the art boards, they were heavy boards and we had to carry it in our portfolio cases. Mm-hmm. So we went out of the door and the Christian children were lining up and with their rulers and with their boards were heading it up and it started to hit the Jewish girls, except me. They never touched me. Because I stood up and I stood in the door and I said, well, that's nice. You are brave Hungarians, hitting 30 against the little girls, four little girls. Now you I have to be very proud. Now you hit me. He said, Varman, we won't touch you, you are not Jewish. I said, I am more Jewish than any of those. You just start with me.
Why did they say you were not Jewish?
I don't know. You see, they needed me. If they needed a good, they were the tests, the written tests. They didn't know how to speak German. Varman was the best in German. If they had need a good composition, they had to turn to me to make their composition, to help them. But maybe that wasn't the point because there were other bright kids, Christian bright kids. They were not everyone did that. Not everyone.
Not everyone stood up to them.
But they didn't hit us, but not everyone of the Christian children did that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a group.
A certain group
which one did it.
What about the kids who didn't do it? Did they actively befriend you?
Yes.
They actively befriended you.
They didn't protect it. But they were friends and they didn't turn away.
Were you able to play in their homes?
Were you
invited to their houses?
Even the anti-Semitic ones.
Mm-hmm.
They had Jewish friends. One of the biggest ones, who, you know, the Arrow Cross, that's the equivalent of the German brown shirts. We had the green shirts. And they were more sadistic, if anybody could be more sadistic than the German bronze, they were the Hungarian Arrow Cross. Mm-hmm. And these girls had the Arrow Cross emblems and they were sticking it their tables and their worksheets and everywhere, and they were active. It was...
Did they have a youth group?
They had a youth group.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked it and they were part of it. And what was important, one of the leader of this group at this school had her best friend was one of the Jewish girls. They always played together, they went together.
How do you understand this dichotomy? Do you think that these girls who were part of this Nazi youth group actually believed what they were hearing in the group?
Yes.
Or how did then
they glamorized it. They glamorized it. They thought if the formative years are very important, and you can brainwash anybody, they said that, look, the Jews are doing so well. They are parasites. They are eating up our lands. They have the lands. They took the lands away from us. They are landowners. Why are they landowners? They were moneylenders, and they landed the money to the Hungarian aristocrats and the Hungarian people who owned the land before. And they gambled their life away and the Jews worked hard, and they landed the money. They couldn't pay them back, they got the land, or they sold the land. And the Jews who worked all their life, and they didn't gamble away or drink away or squander it away, they bought it. They couldn't stand it. The industrialists were Jews. There were certain profession what a Christian wouldn't touch because it was beneath them. Like having a bar or a tavern, most of them were Jewish. They made money on liquor, but they worked hard. So later on, they did something else. And the emancipation came in 1800s, in the middle 1800s, 1862, I guess, the Jews were emancipated. So they went to the universities. They were studious, and most of the doctors became Jews. The universities were full of Jews until after the First War, when they have the numerous classes. Just 6%, only 6% of the Jews could attend schools. Later on, we couldn't even go to medical school or other school, my age group. Not my older than me, because after the war I could go. So that was the cause. They thought the Jews are eating up every, we had a depression, like you had it in America. So you needed a scapegoat. And Hitler said the Jews were the scapegoat.
Do you think that these children believed this information?
Absolutely, because it came from the teachers, the parents, and their elders.
How then were they able to be friends with these Jews that you would describe? You said they had them in their home. How did they fit that together?
It's a controversy, human nature.
And the parents were accepting of the Jewish kids coming home to play?
They were anti-Semitic, but they accepted. They had Jewish friends too. You know what they always said to my parents? What I heard, and I don't buy that and I hate this. They said, oh, well, you are different. You are not like the other Jews. So every Christian had their own Jews, their own home Jews. Even Orain Horthy had a Jewish wife. His son married a Jewish girl, one of his son. His best bridge partners and buddies were Jews who were exterminated in the concentration camp, and they were his buddies.
So these were the exceptions.
And
everyone
his granddaughter is working for Elal in Switzerland.
His children were raised as Jews then by his wife?
No. His wife was a converted.
She converted.
Her parents or her, I don't know, but everybody knew that she was Jewish origin.
But his grandchild.
His grandchild is nobody is Jewish in that family. His son, who is alive, one was killed by the Germans that drew us into the war, and they said the Russian killed him, but the German killed him. And he was a prisoner at the Gestapo, this man, and his son. His son was always very involved with the Jewish community. All his friends were Jewish. One of my teachers was his friend, and he was the ambassador of Hungary to Brazil. And this teacher taught at the Jewish gymnasium, was a poet and a translator of Portuguese. And he took him out to Brazil, and he escaped this fascism, the German occupation. But he was caught by the Germans, his son, and he was put in the concentration camp. He married a Jewish girl whose father was one of the biggest textile industrialist, Goldberger, who died in the concentration camp in Dachau.
What kind of information did you have at that point about what was going on in the rest of Europe?
We had all the information. And you know, the Hungarian mind is that we know everything better than anybody. We read between the lines. And whenever they misinformed us, we always read in between. But at that time, the press was very liberal, mostly in Jewish hands. And we got the information. We had the very bloody Nazi papers also. But the good information, and we had the radio, the BBC. And even if it later on it wasn't allowed to listen, but everybody did.
And what did your mother and your stepfather discuss? Did they ever talk about leaving? Did they think that it would come to Hungary?
My stepfather said, I'm a Hungarian first, foremost, and over, it couldn't happen. I'm not a Galicianer, and I'm not a Polish Jew, or a Czechoslovakian, or anybody. It couldn't happen in Hungary. My mother, who was coming from Transylvania and had more experience of being and more identity, because my stepfather is coming from another kind of background. He wasn't religious at all. He did everything for mother, but that was it.
Both times she had the same situation.
Sort of.
Sort of. No.
And my mother said, I would like to leave, but they didn't make any move. And even in the last minute, when my stepfather was offered false papers, Gentile papers, to cover himself and go in hiding, he said, oh, I would not do that. I'm Hungarian. And that what took him to Mauthausen and Gunskirchen, and he...
And he died?
No, he came back
he
from
came
Mauthausen
back.
After typhoid fever and everything, and the labor camp and beating. He was a Hungarian Jew, all right. He didn't come to America because he was a Hungarian.
Did you think that the family should have left at that time?
Oh, sure.
Your feeling at that time was that your family should be getting out?
Oh, sure.
Was it the kind of situation where you could talk to your parents about it?
Look, it was too late. They didn't have any place to go when the German takeover. That was the last spot. It was 1944.
Before 1944, did you feel that you should be leaving?
I didn't know. I didn't have any feeling about
that. Did you feel that scared? Did you feel that the Germans were going to move in?
I wasn't concerned with that. I was studying. I had my own life. I really...
You saw it as something that was outside of you?
Yes. We were in a situation we couldn't help. I didn't think about anything. I did what my parents did. And my main aim was... By that time, I was so involved with my school. I went to school at 7 in the morning. I came home at 6 in the evening. And I had lots of homework besides private tutors Saturdays and Sundays, my exercises and mountain climbing and everything, to have a well-rounded education. And mother was emphasizing always on languages and other extracurricular things. So I was so overwhelmed, and I was an avid reader, and we had our own group, and even everything, everybody was, you know, we were chopped, like, you know, the salami, you slice one, and finally it goes out. That's what happened to Hungary. Hitler chopped us up, and the fascism chopped us up. We were eased out of our businesses, of the jobs, and everybody was, I was in a Jewish gymnasium, everybody was in a bad situation by that time, so one
you're
was
talking,
better than other.
You're talking about 1944, you're talking
about 1942, 43, 44.
So that you saw that families that you knew
got worse and worse, yes.
The businesses were taken away.
You couldn't practice law by that time. The businesses had to have a Christian, like my stepfather had to have a Christian Stroman for the business, because he wouldn't get furniture, he wouldn't get supplies. It was getting worse and worse. You couldn't buy this. It was the food shortage. But everybody was in the same situation, and we were just studying and preparing ourselves to be superhuman in our school, because I attended a special class in a special school.
This was the Jewish
and
gymnasium?
That was after.
After the gymnasium.
No, that's after this public school.
After the public school.
Public school I enrolled because the...